Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to Her. Oh, we're on episode 124, and this podcast is all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life, and in this case, it's going to be her condoms and contraception options. Oh, this is going to be a great segment. And before we start the segment, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate this podcast and review us, because I read these things, love to hear from you. Yes, I do. Indeedy do. All right. Well, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Female condoms and contraception. Who would know? Oh my gosh, female condoms. Well, this is going to be an interesting one. And our go-to person clearly is Dr. Alyssa Dweck, who's a gynecologist in New York, and she is a top doctor in New York Magazine. She has multiple degrees, an MD from Hahnemann University. She is proficient in robotic surgery and has expertise in what we're going to be talking about today, female sexual health. The title of her book, oh my gosh, if you don't have this, loser, is The Complete A to Z for Your V. And I'm not even going to tell you what the V stands for, because, honey, if you don't know that, well, yeah, we're giving up right now. Dr. Dweck, welcome back to the Her Podcast.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me back.
All right, female condoms. We need to hear about this. The FC2 female condom. Where did all this come from? And where is it now? Help us understand, because so many women are out there are saying, wait a minute, if he's not going to wear something, maybe I should wear something. What's going on?
Right. So, you know, I think this is all so part of the female empowerment movement, if you will, so that women can really take control not only of their contraception, but also of the risk for infection. So the FC2 new female condom is a huge improvement from what was available in past, where there was a female condom, and the complaints that I used to hear about this is that they were really noisy. Almost sounded like someone opening up a pack of M&Ms in a quiet movie theater. That's the way one patient had described it to me in past.
Oh my gosh!
No kidding. So nothing like ruining the mood with a noisy condom like that. So
yeah.
There has been significant improvement with the new variety female condom too, because it really is not so loud at all, and it's been FDA approved as a safe and effective measure for both contraception and prevention of STD, and it is not latex, which is very important for so many of our latex sensitive women and men. So this is really a not so new, but really great new thing on the market that women need to know about.
Well, can you describe what it kind of looks like? I know that a lot of women
sure.
out there in her podcast land are saying, what the hey? I mean,
yes.
What
well,
is it? And how do you, you know, describe it?
This is basically a long sheath that is clear, almost looks like a large and expanded condom, if you will, like a male condom, but there is an inner ring and an outer ring. The inner ring is what's inserted into the vagina, and then the sheath covers basically the inside canal of the vagina, and then the outer ring sits comfortably at the opening of the vagina on the vulva. It is lubricated so that it, you know, that helps with comfortable and pleasurable intimacy. And like I said, it is not latex, which is important. So not only does it protect against pregnancy and infection, but it also can enhance pleasure because it does contain lubrication. You also can add an oil-based or a water-based lubricant to this, if you like, to enhance pleasure and make it a little bit easier. And it's, while it may take a little learning curve to figure out how to insert it comfortably, most women figure it out without problem after a couple of tries, and we find it to be just another excellent choice to have in our war chest to help with contraception and prevention of infection.
Well, so how do you actually use this? There you are, you know, with that romantic moment. I mean, what happens here? I mean, we know what happens with a male condom, right?
Right.
So how does a woman, how shall we say, negotiate this?
Well, the truth is this female condom, the FC2, can be placed several hours before intercourse. So if a woman is anticipating intimacy, she can insert it before the big moment, if you will, and it can be done in a discreet way. For partners who are comfortable with each other enough to insert it, you know, during intimacy, that's fine too. So it's really got a couple of ways to anticipate.
Huh. Okay, so you don't have to feel that uncomfortable about it. Is it easy to use? Do women run into problems when they're, you know, learning how to be able to insert and, as it were, keep it in place? And then what? What do you do? Just kind of run us through that.
It's similar to, you know, when you're learning to use a tampon or maybe a Diva cup. There may be a little teeny bit of a learning curve where it takes some practice, but after that it becomes old hat and not a problem at all for women who are comfortable with this type of thing. So I think that, yes, it's a well-received and necessary option, especially since many women want to take this type of thing into their own hands. This is, you know, especially unique because women can take their contraception into their own hands in a discreet way with birth control pills or a IUD or an implant. But when it comes to protection against infection, other than male condoms and dental dams, which of course are a little bit clumsy, this is really the only way women have to take the control and protect themselves from infection. In addition, the efficacy against pregnancy is higher than the male condom. So whereas the male condom, we usually quote, is about 85% effective to prevent pregnancy, this is closer to 95%. So that's
wow.
Nice to know.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive. Yeah. And this kind of reminds me of the diaphragm in certain respects.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely. So there are some women who have attempted diaphragms, which frankly are kind of hard to come by these days, although still available and reasonable.
Why is that? I just want to ask, why is it? Because it was kind
know.
Of a cool way to go, you know?
Sure. They were very popular for some time, and I think that they have become less popular because we have so many other really wonderful forms of birth control out there. But they were a little cumbersome to use for some women. You had to be fitted for it by your healthcare professional. And some women who were prone to things like urinary tract infections or perhaps yeast infections found using these might increase their risk of these infections a little bit. In addition, to use a diaphragm correctly, you really had to use a spermicide along with it. And the spermicides were causing lots of irritation for some women. And in fact, the spermicide called nanoxynil 9, which is excellent for killing sperm, might have a result of increasing the risk of certain STDs in the first place. So for that reason, that particular spermicide has fallen out of favor.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So no wonder the poor little diaphragm disappeared. You know,
right.
Well, you know, bye-bye to that one. Well, if that's, you know, right now, what does a woman have to do to get the female condom? I mean, how does she, you know, discuss this with whomever? And how does she, you know, keep refills of it? How does that whole thing work?
I believe there is a website for FC2 where they can be found, and I think that they are likely found in many college health services. I think the pharmacist and the drugstore can probably help with this, but I'm pretty sure that they're just in the regular pharmacy.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then I also know that there are, just like you said, that the diaphragm had to be fitted and their sizes and whatever, there are now custom condoms. And they're now, I think they're coming in different sizes for men, for instance. So do these, does the female condom come in a variety of sizes?
I don't believe so. I think there is a one-size-fits-all type of phenomenon. And remember, it's somewhat flexible. So, you know, vaginas come in different shapes and sizes, but for the most part, they are expandable, and so is this female condom. So it's a one-size-fits-all, as far as I know.
As a gynecologist, are you someone who is recommending this to a lot of your patients?
Well, look, I think that, to be frank, the male condom is still the most popular barrier method out there, and I think they're less expensive than the female condom, but there is most definitely a place for the female condom, like I said, when women want to take control of prevention of STIs on their own. In addition, there are some couples who are what we call discordant when it comes to things like HIV or even herpes, where one member of a couple has an infection and the other does not, and people want to take as much precaution as possible to prevent these infections from being transmitted back and forth. So that's another situation where this female condom is very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we mentioned the diaphragm, which is, you know, kind of phasing out for a lot of reasons, as you mentioned. What are the other popular forms of contraceptive out there? What's
going on?
What's
so
cutting
glad
edge
you
here?
Asked. Well, I think what is most popular and really make, well, I guess let me back up a moment. What's most popular is the birth control pill. It has been for some time. I think it's excellent for prevention of pregnancy, but, you know, upwards of 98 to 99% effective. It's typically well tolerated, and it has a lot of other non-contraceptive benefits. So, for example, women who suffer with miserable, painful, heavy periods are going to notice improvement of those symptoms on the pill. Women who might be at higher risk for certain cancers might get benefit from the pill, because we know for a long time that the pill helps to prevent uterine cancer and ovarian cancer. So these are big deals that I think we need to keep in mind. In addition, some women who have hormonal imbalances that might cause them to have acne or hair growth in unwanted places or really erratic periods are going to benefit from the pill, because it's helpful to regulate the hormone levels and the fluctuations. So that's number one. But what really has made an intense splash is the long-acting reversible contraceptive category. For example, the hormonal IUDs or the copper IUDs or even the implant that goes in the arm as a way to prevent pregnancy. And these are very well received, because people don't have to think about them every day like they do with the pill, but rather they work in a long-acting but reversible way.
Huh. Okay. And so tell me more about that. How does one access? Go for it.
Right. So the most popular IUD, at least in my community, is probably one called the Kylena. This is just one of several different hormonal IUDs where progesterone is secreted from this IUD to prevent pregnancy. And the IUD does need to be inserted by the healthcare practitioner, which can be a little bit uncomfortable, but I have to say most people tolerate it really, really well. This particular type of IUD is effective for 5 years, but reversible. So say someone gets it for 2 or 3 years, and then they decide they want to start a family or have another child, they can have the IUD removed and their fertility returns naturally and quickly and immediately. This type of hormonal IUD, and like I said, there are various different brands and varieties, is also helpful to prevent heavy bleeding and cramping in some cases. So we do find that it has extra benefit other than just birth control. The other one I want to make mention of is the copper IUD. because we certainly have a large group of women who cannot tolerate or don't want to take any sort of hormone at all for whatever reason, and we won't get into that. And so the copper IUD, which is good for 10 years and very likely longer than that, we're still waiting for the final word on that, but at least 10 years, has no hormone in it, and again, works by preventing pregnancy and is very effective but easily reversible.
Ha. Huh. Okay. And how long can a woman use an IUD? You know, is there some kind of expiration date?
Yes, that's a great question. There is definitely an expiration date on the hormonal IUDs. It's typically 5 years, at which point it can either be removed and replaced immediately, and then you have uninterrupted contraception, or it can be removed and, you know, people can go on and either have children or use another form of birth control. It's really individual. The copper IUD that I mentioned is good for 10 years. And same thing, once it expires, it can be removed and replaced. But there's definitely new guideline possibly coming down the pike to extend its use for even longer than that. So we're all looking forward to that, because certainly people would rather not have to have them removed and replaced.
You know, there are a lot of myths circulating around about IUDs. Can you kind of dispel some of these?
Sure. One of my favorite myths to dispel is that you cannot use a tampon with an IUD. So women come in absolutely frightened that if they put in a tampon and then try to remove the tampon, they're going to automatically dislodge and remove their IUD. This is absolutely not true. The IUD is inside the uterus, and the only thing sticking out of the cervix is the string that is used to retrieve the IUD when removal is needed and to check to make sure that it's still in place. A tampon is placed in the vagina, and when you pull out a tampon, the string of the IUD will not be dislodged or moved at all. So there's really no trouble with that. So that's definitely a myth that I wanted to dispel. I think the other myth really is rooted in the fact that there were IUDs from the distant past that were really giving women a much higher risk of an overwhelming pelvic infection called PID. And
oh,
this
yes.
really has been rectified, because the strings of the modern IUDs are what we call a monofilament, meaning that they are not braided. It's just a single filament of a special type of material that does not technically conduct bacteria marching up the string and getting into the uterus. So this risk of infection has really lessened to almost nothing. There's a very, very low risk. And of course, safe sexual practices are always recommended for women with an IUD who have more than one partner. So that's a rule that's going to stay in effect regardless.
I see. Okay. Any other big time myths with IUDs? Like, what about pregnancy? You can get pregnant with an IUD and then you have a real mess. What's going on with that?
Sure. Well, look, thankfully, this is a rare occurrence. Less than 1% of women with an IUD will get pregnant. And so it's a very, very effective form of birth control. You know, somewhat more concerning thing is that if someone does get pregnant with an IUD in, there is a slightly higher chance that this is an ectopic pregnancy, which means a pregnancy that occurs outside the uterus, typically in the fallopian tube, and that is not compatible with going forward with that pregnancy. So while this can be a little complex to deal with, it's usually a treatable issue, and things get back to themselves quickly.
All right. So good. You know, because I, you know, as a physician, I've heard this so many times. Women get freaked out going, oh, my God, I'm going to have a baby that is got an IUD inserted in its head.
Well, look, we've all seen the picture of a baby inside the uterus, in utero, on ultrasound, you know, holding an IUD, because that can happen. But again, that is very, very rare. I have never seen
really
that in my
rare.
Practice,
but I
guess it is worth mention.
Okay, so let's look at other forms of contraception. Implants. Tell us about the implants.
Right. So the latest implant is called Nexplanon, and this is a 3-year implant, and it's basically a single rod that secretes a progesterone hormone, and it's usually placed on the inner arm, and it's highly effective for contraception. Again, the bleeding habits on the rod might be a little bit erratic, unlike the birth control pill. Instead of having a regular monthly period, women typically get kind of an erratic, irregular bleeding habit for a couple of months, and then many, many women lose their period altogether with the Nexplanon, but that doesn't mean it's not working. Women like this because they don't have to have a vaginal procedure to have it inserted. And it's easy to check because you can usually feel it through the skin of your arm. And most people do very well with it, but it does need to be removed and replaced every 3 years. It is reversible.
So it's every 3 years. Okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And right. And it's fairly effective, you say?
It's very effective. Remember, when comparing the rod, the IUD, and the birth control pill, we don't have to worry about daily administration and remembering to use these long-acting reversible contraceptives because once they're in for the duration. And with the pill, of course, you typically have to remember to take it every day. So for our more forgetful patients, these long-acting reversible forms are very helpful. In addition,
wow.
Some people, just prefer not having to take a pill thinking about that type of regimen every day.
Well, that's where the shots come in, too. Tell us about the shots.
Yes. So I'm so glad you brought that up. The Depo-Provera shot, again, a progesterone shot that's given every 3 months in most cases, and it's well-tolerated, although many women will complain that they gain, a small amount of weight with the shot. So I don't get a lot of takers for this form of birth control because everyone around me seems to be watching their figures. However, it is very effective for people who are interested in that form of birth control. Again, many women lose their period when they're on the shot, and this is a welcome change for some and a not-so-welcome change for others. So that's kind of individual. But it works well for birth control.
Heck yeah. And what about tubal removal and just tubal surgery like this? What's
right.
that all about?
Right. So tubal ligation and now tubal removal, which we'll talk about a bit more, is still very, very popular for permanent contraception. And I think that's the key. This is permanent contraception, whereas the birth control pill, the long-acting reversible contraceptives we spoke about are not permanent. They're reversible. The tubal ligation or tubal removal is permanent. So women have to be 100% certain they don't want to have children any longer. And oftentimes this is done at the time of somebody's C-section or last delivery, if you will. The newer push is to consider a tubal removal instead of a tubal ligation, meaning instead of just burning the tube so that there is an interruption and sperm and egg cannot meet naturally, we now sometimes advise complete removal of both fallopian tubes. And the reason for that is it seems to really cut down the risk of ovarian cancer and tubal cancer for future. And since ovarian cancer is a particularly aggressive disease, picked up very late in stage, it's becoming a little bit more of the standard to remove the tubes rather than just tying them or burning them.
Wow. See, we didn't understand that about the relationship with ovarian cancer in the past. And I think
right.
that this is really new news that women need to hear.
Absolutely.
Because this is important. This is
we
huge.
Are. We're learning more about this as the days go along. But the current theory is that ovarian cancer may actually originate in the tubal fimbriae, the edges of the tube. So actually removing them may be quite helpful for prevention. So in the right person, for the right reason, yeah, this could be really beneficial.
Wow. Okay, well, another eye-opener. this is just fabulous. You know, we're talking about fertility, right? We're talking about contraception and trying to really have some control over everything from infection to fertility. What's a fertility window? People talk about that all the time. And so when women are talking about contraception and trying to, you know, plan and make some sense of all this, they hear that word a lot, especially career-minded women who really need to be planning things more strategically. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So this is a really important topic, especially with what you bring up about women and their professional aspirations. So more and more women are waiting longer to start their families because they want to pursue their professional aspirations. So the fertility window that we speak about, you know, where we used to always say, oh, once you're 40, your fertility really declines significantly. But what we're really seeing is that fertility is starting to decline probably as early as your mid-30s. So I'd say from 32 to 35 is a time to start considering having a conversation about fertility and pushing women to consider alternatives if they're not ready to get pregnant right away, especially if they're considering having multiple children in future. So what I do is start to have this conversation with my patients at about 32. Not because I want to scare anybody, but I just want to open their minds to thinking about it. Some women will actually go the distance of having their eggs frozen in an effort to freeze them at a young age and then use them later on in life when they want to get pregnant. Because we are born with all of our eggs rather than making new eggs as time goes along. So therefore, our eggs age with us, and problems can occur as eggs are aging with the genetic material inside. So the sooner we get those eggs ready to roll, the better off we are for fertility. So I start this conversation at about 32, definitely bring it up again about 35, and by 40, we're definitely having this conversation so women can make intelligent decisions for themselves.
Wow. Okay. You know, I think it's just incredibly important that a woman pause for a moment, and hopefully she'll have someone like you in her life, a gynecologist who's an expert, who's willing to take the time, and then really sit down and think about timing. I know that everyone's very romantic at times and say, well, whatever happens, happens, and it is what it is. But, you know, there is something very strong and powerful to be said for planning and really thinking about the future in a way so that you can really optimize the entire experience of having that precious child or children in your life. I'm sure that's the way you discuss it. Is that the context within which you put
Absolutely.
This
in? Absolutely, yes. And the other reason that this comes up is because many women find themselves unpartnered at the time that they might want to be considering their age and fertility window, as you put it. So if that's the case, you know, we want to empower women to start to make decisions that will be best for themselves later on. So yeah, that's definitely very important.
What about storing eggs? I mean,
yes.
You know, tell us about how you discuss that with someone, especially if, you know, they're worried that by the time they get partnered up and stuff, it'll be a ways down the, you know, the line,
right,
et cetera. Well, or maybe they may not be partnered and maybe they need to do something else. I mean, we have so many options today. How do you talk about this?
We're so lucky. I talk about it very directly. The way to freeze eggs, which is called cryopreservation, is not my area of expertise, but the conversation that I have with women is to consider seeing a fertility specialist who provides this type of service so that they can see what type of option is available for either egg freezing or embryo freezing or just saying, this is not for me and I'm not interested in pursuing this, just so they have all the information at their disposal. So there could be egg freezing and embryo freezing, which are two separate entities.
Awesome. Okay, well, we've been talking with Dr. Alyssa Dweck. She is the author of The Complete A to Z for Your V. And her website is Dr. Dweck, and I'll spell that. That's Dr. is D-R, and then it's D as in dog, W-E-C-K.com, drdweck.com, to learn more about her wonderful work. She is our go-to gynecologist for all things this kind of topic, sexual health, and really how to look at the new ways that you as a woman can empower yourself to take control and manage your sexual health and your sexual life. Dr. Dweck, I can't thank you enough on behalf of all of our listeners on the HER podcast for your wonderful knowledge and wisdom. And I know that our listeners have been scribbling along and taking all kinds of notes because this has been a really rich podcast. Thank you, Dr. Dweck.
Thank you so much.
All right. And everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of HER by just hitting subscribe on iTunes or run on over to our show page at RadioMD.com. And then just take a moment or two and run on over to iTunes and rate and review us because we love to hear from you. Always, always, always looking forward to that feedback and just communicating with you. Hey, I'm Dr. Pam Peake. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.